love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your host, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
I gotta do right before they call me home.
Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. Today is July 20th, 2011. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the Streets Don't Love You Back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. We have comedian Mr. Stevie Mack. You've seen him on NBC, UPN, Last Comic Standing, HBO, Spike TV, BET, Discovery Health Channel, Howard Stern Show, Entertainment, True Hollywood Story, VH1, MTV, and movies, videos, commercials, and now you're going to hear him on the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. We're going to introduce him in just 1 minute. Let me first introduce my co-host Boyd to the show.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we thanking everybody that tunes in on our show every Wednesday night. And like my missus said, we got a great show tonight with my man Stevie Mack. He's about to bring it to you. And, you know, I've got one announcement to make before we get started. And that announcement is about my boy, Mr. George Marano. And he's having a fundraiser for his In Wrongly and Just Incarceration, that's going to be coming up August 18th, 2011. And we're asking everybody to join in on that. It's going to be in New Jersey. And also, if you would like to donate to his cause, you can send that donation to Creative Writing Foundation, Justice for George Marano. And the number is EIN number 45-275-4955, 2626 South Chatwick Street, Philadelphia, PA, 19145. And we'll have more information on that in a few minutes, and we're going to get right to the show right now. And much love to my man, Stevie Mack. We're going to turn the mic over to you, formally introduce yourself, and do what you do.
Yeah, baby, this is your boy Stevie Mack. I'm live here in Inglewood, California. Tonight I am in a hot tub. Yes. My muscles was achy breaky, and I said I'm gonna have to take it over here and make it, and without a fakey, I'm gonna shake it. My groove thing on down to the hot tub. So I'm in a jacuzzi. I'm not butt naked. About that, this is not a butt naked broadcast. This is a semi nude broadcast. I got my trunks on. You know, I'm honored to be here tonight, and loving the topic. Well, just the name of your show, The Streets Don't Love You Back. And if anybody could tell you about that, it could be Stevie Mack, because I have experience in the streets, and that's what my one-man show, Diary of a Crackhead, is all about, talking about my life experience growing up in the streets and how I had to come up out of that. And now helping to save other lives, man, with this message of importance. Very important message.
That's right. And, you know, we're hoping to have a little bit of a lighter show tonight with a little bit of comedy, but we also know that, you know, like you said, you did grow up, with that kind of a lifestyle. And we want you to go back a little bit, if you would, to your youth and just tell us a little bit about how you did grow up and what circumstances you grew up around, you know, before you were able to write about that.
Oh, well, I grew up in a crazy family, and if you don't know who the crazy person is in your family, it's you. Everybody's got some crazy folk in their family, but nobody wants to admit who the crazy ones are. You know, all the crazy people always think it's somebody else. Anybody but them. Y'all crazy. No, you're the one. Yeah. And so my entire family was crazy. We used to watch TV shows like The Brady Bunch. and wonder why our family couldn't be like the Brady, but we was more like the crazy bunch. Everybody had their own quirk, and the whole kicker to this thing is my mama had six kids by six different baby daddies, and I talk about that in my show. So a lot of people, you know, dealing with that shame and low self-esteem issues growing up and you know, all over the place, mama moving a lot, moving a spot, get evicted, move again, get evicted, and I didn't even know that that's what she was doing. You know, I grew up thinking that an eviction notice came with a rental agreement. Come to find out, no, it don't. That's from people not paying any rent. And that was back before credit checks jumped off. They weren't checking up credit back then. You could move anywhere and stay anywhere and didn't move somewhere else without any references. So, yeah, a lot of gangs, drug-infested environments, you know. I grew up in South Central Pasadena, Pomona, Watts, Compton. You name it. In fact, we lived in Watts during the Watts riots. And I was in South Central, of course, during the 92 uprising. We call it the L.A. riots. Back when Rodney King was beat by the LAPD and they got off scot-free. Now, we got a lot of that going on. I heard you talk about this young man, George, who's locked up unjustly and fighting for his cause. That's important that we support one another's causes because if we don't, who will? If we don't help each other, who will? So I try to carry this message of experience, strength, and hope, but through comedy. Now, I got to tell you, I have producers and directors coming in on my one-man show now, and they're coaching me on how to take it off Broadway and perhaps even to Broadway and get a Tony Award with this show. But some elements have changed in the show in that I have to act out some of the more grungy, gritty, grimy details. Do you guys cuss on this show, or is this a Christian show? Or?
Oh, no, this is an uncensored show, and this is a show where we do keep it real at, because the bottom line, like, people don't love you back, and we can't keep it real with our youths out here to let them know that the streets don't love them back. You never will be able to keep it real. And I want to iterate on something, Mr. Mac, too. I'm glad you listened to what I said when I spoke on Mr. George, and I would definitely like for you to speak out about Mr. George on your show as well, because he's been in prison for 27 years for a nonviolent offense, you know what I mean, a drug charge, you know what I mean, that you got a lot of these molesters out here, and these cats beating and killing our women and kids, and it's like a resolving dough with them, you know what I mean? So, like Marlon said, an ingest anywhere is an ingest everywhere, and Mr. George got to truly ingest. So I'm calling on all soldiers to back me up on getting Mr. Mayor Ronald's stuff out there in the public.
That's very important. I mean, you're looking in L.A. where this BART officer, Russian guy, shot this young brother in the back while he was laying down. And this dude only gets like 18 months, and he's out already. And, I mean, so, you know, there is a lot of injustice going on in society. And we have to use whatever art we have. So, you know, you got young men who do comedy, men and women, and some doing hip-hop and whatnot. But here's one thing I don't get. The artists who are always promoting the hell out of some beverage or some clothing line that they ain't getting a dime for. I mean, yeah, I'm drinking this and I'm wearing that, but they ain't giving you a penny. In fact, they might support causes that that are killing folk in your community. So, yeah, that's one thing I can't stand.
Amen. You know, and we have to speak out about that. And like I said, me and my wife is, you know, fully supporting Mr. George. And Mr. George is a great guy. And we just definitely have to step up to the plate and not only set Mr. George free, set all these other brothers and sisters free that's doing these long stretches in the penitentiary for one drug charge, you know. My one homeboy just come home after 18 years in prison. He received a life sentence in the state of Michigan up under the 650 drug law in the 80s, and they finally overturned that, and he's home now after 18 years. He's been home now 2.5 months, so God is good. And if we push, we can break that cycle of unjustice.
Man, that is ridiculous. 18 years, that's a whole lifetime, you know. They can't give you your time back, that's for damn sure. But one thing I can say to those who are listening in prison, because I know a lot of y'all got them phones up in there, and y'all listening, because they ain't supposed to have a phone, but they get the phone, you know. Just like they get drugs and everything else, they get phones up in there. So y'all listening up in there, use that time wisely. Now, when I went to prison, and all my jail time was due to my drug and alcohol abuse, doing the crazy things that I did, getting paranoid, getting in high-speed chases with myself. Nobody behind me. I'm flying down the highway in my car, getting away because I'm paranoid off crack and all that. All that stuff is stealing for my addiction. Wound up in jail a lot. But let me just say, you could use or abuse that time anywhere, whether you're in prison or on the streets. Use that time wisely. Study to show thyself approved. And that way, when you do get out or get close to the end of time, because we all going to die at some point, you will have done something worthy with your time. I mean, let me tell you, man, 1994, I was facing 25 to life over here in California. And that was for petty theft with a prior. Now, tell me about injustice. Did I deserve to go to prison for the rest of my life for stealing a coffee pot? I don't think so. What I did, I went to the law library and studied the law and found out that there is a loophole under that three strikes law where the judge, at his discretion, you could plead guilty to a felony, and at his discretion, he could drop it down to a misdemeanor. But then they removed the law library out of a lot of jails, man, so people can't even study their own cases and find out how to get up out of there. Prison and jail is a modern institution of slavery. And if you look at the 13th Amendment, the 13th Amendment was supposed to ratify the Constitution, right? It said, you know, I quote, "There'll be no slavery or involuntary servitude except those duly convicted of a crime." And that's when they bootstrapped and made up a bunch of laws to make it easy for people of color to go to jail and be convicted of a crime. And then your rights are stripped of you once you do that. You can't vote. You can't have a gun. Yeah, everybody can have a gun except you. That's what's happening right there. So, send us.
Right, and we know that right now, I would say about at least 80% of the men and women that are incarcerated on drug charges are usually first or second nonviolent drug charges. So, you know, it's definitely, prisons are now a moneymaker, and it is definitely modern slavery. You know, more and more prisons are private, and they're big moneymakers.
Prisons have become privatized. That's a prison industry is on the stock exchange. You can invest in prison industries.
That's right. We need more people to stand up and fight for these laws and change the old laws that were made, 30 years ago. And, let's get all these people out so they can come home and take care of their children and their families.
And everybody got to play their part. You got to figure out what's your part. What part do you play? What does God bless you with? What is your gift? What's your talent? Use that. Some people could sing. Some people could dance. Some people could do comedy. Some people could write. Some people could just go straight to law school and become a lawyer and work for the benefit and good of all.
That's right. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved with drugs when you were young.
Well, there's three kinds of family. And family, let me just say, family has the biggest influence on you. Drug addiction is hereditary and environmental. It's coupled. It's both. If you remember the movie Trading Places with Eddie Murphy, they had a $1 bet going there. This black guy from the hood, we bring him into this industry, and I guarantee you that he don't change because it's hereditary. And other ones like, no, it's environmental. You take him out of the environment, and he'll do a lot better. Well, I'm here to tell you it's both hereditary and environmental. My mom's drank, pops drank. Drugs and alcohol was fluent in the community and the home, so it was easily accessed growing up. So, and all my friends got high on something. It was the same in every household, just about.
I can't really remember anybody whose household nobody wasn't getting high in, come to think of it. And so, you know, one thing leads to it, you get some drugs from family members or you get some drugs from friends. And you start experimenting, and that's what happened with me, experimenting and liking the effect of it. Because you grow up, like I was talking about earlier, with a low self-esteem and a low self-image, you want to medicate that with something, and drugs is the most easiest, readily available thing to medicate so that you don't feel the pain of your circumstances and situation. And it was escape. It's an escape, escapism. And we learn in recovery programs that the drugs and the alcohol actually saved a lot of people's lives, because a lot of people would have went on and killed themselves as opposed to, you know, taking the drugs and alcohol. So with the drugs and alcohol there, people was able to medicate and escape as opposed to committing suicide. You know, we're starting to see it more now, but you didn't see a big high suicide rate in black communities, maybe more so now because a lot of the coexistence with other folk. but yeah, that's how I got started, man. Family and friends, influence, environmental and hereditary, and just sampling and getting high, partying. I was a party animal growing up. I was at every party, and if you know what my favorite drug was? My favorite was whatever you had. What you got? Yeah, that's my favorite. And started with weed and PCP. Oh, man, back in the day, phencyclidine, piperidine, and tetrahydrocannabinol. They called it wet daddies. Or butt naked, because people would take off all their clothes. I didn't take off all my clothes, though, when I did it. I would get high with people who would take off all their clothes, and I'd put them out in my car and drive off and have a nice outfit for the week. That's one of the things that would happen with me. But in terms of escalating, you have to look at, and since we're talking politics, the drug, every time, if you look at the revolution, every time the black man was coming up, and trying to raise his fist and say black power and unite for a common cause and do anything right, here comes a bunch of influx of drugs into the community. And who was bringing them drugs in there? The government, the FBI, the CIA. And it's no secret now, especially because we know in the 60s, after the black power movement, a lot of heroin, for those who are proper, came into the community. And then the 70s, followed up with cocaine, the influx of cocaine, and movies like Superfly, promoting and making it look like the thing to do. Ooh, yeah, everybody want to do cocaine because that's what hip, slick, cool people do. Pimps, players, hustlers. And then the crack. You know, ain't no brother figured out how to rock up no cocaine. That was done in a laboratory somewhere. And the crack just devastated and poured through the community like nothing else. I mean, I think that was probably the worst thing ever. Hits the community like a bomb. And here's the backlash now is meth. Meth is doing to the white community what crack did to the black community. So, you know, you throw a stone. You can't throw a stone if you live in a glass house, right? So experimenting with the drugs over a period of time, I crossed the fine line. Like everybody who gets caught up do, you cross a fine line between partying and a problem. And when the party turns into a problem is when you got to question yourself and go, hey, you know what? Maybe I don't need to be doing this no more. But at that point, it's too late. You can't stay stopped. You try to stop, but you can't stay stopped. And this is where recovery programs come in to play that are helping a lot of people get off of drugs and alcohol because they found out that they done crossed the fine line where they can't stay stopped. Because there is a scientific and medical difference between people who are addicted or addicts versus people who are just what we call recreational users, you know? So people who wind up getting addicted to it, that's why I say it's hereditary and it's environmental. This hereditary part is that the person who's addicted has a different physiological makeup that when they receive a drug into their body, their body react different to that drug than a recreational user. You've probably seen people who can get high on a regular basis and still maintain a job and a family and all that. Rarely have we seen that, very rarely. And then there's those people who get high until the job is lost, the family's lost, and they're still getting high all the way down to pushing a shopping cart and pushing up daisies. So, yeah, that's a little bit about that.
Right. So what was your turning point, and what made you change your life?
Desperation was a turning point. You know, you hit that bottom, and you get desperate to want to come up. It's like a drowning person in the water, flailing, screaming for help. And then somebody throw them that lifesaver. And I ain't talking about the candy. I'm talking about the round thing with the rope tied to it. They threw it to you. But some people, you know, some people when they're drowning and you try to help save them from drowning, they'll drown your ass and take you under. You ever see that? They fighting you back because you're trying to help them. But my turning point was at a point in 1990 where I had been getting high to the point to where I was destitute, out of money, had lost my apartment and car, and was living in the streets, and had to make a decision. And so, you know what? Either I'm going to keep doing that, or I'm going to come back out of this and be the person who I'm supposed to be. So I know I was talented all along, but also in part of that was self-discovery, where I discovered my comedic abilities, is when I had first got sober back in 1990. So I made the attempt, you know, got into detox and everything and said, I need to get off of this, but I needed help. And you know what? That's the biggest thing, man. People, those who are listening, if you got a problem and you need help, don't be so egotistical and so self-centered and so I got to do this on my own. No, reach out for help. You know, you look at those programs and you think, oh, that's for weak people. Nah, the strong, you know, you have to surrender to win. You know, you ever see somebody in a fight getting their ass kicked, but they keep coming back and they just won't stop until you, till the person have to kill them? They need to surrender. Just stop. Stop so you can win. So, yeah, out of desperation to want to live is was the turning point.
Did you go to any kind of a program, or did you just decide to make a change?
No, I went to a detox program, yeah, a recovery program, long-term, six-month program. First I went for 30 days, and then I started listening to what the people were saying in there, and then I decided to go for a longer term for 6 months. I stayed clean and sober for like 2 years, but I hadn't worked the whole process that they suggested I work. And I was still trying to do it my way, and nothing had really changed. I was still had that criminal mind, criminal element in me. And so you can't expect a spiritual experience and not do spiritual things. You can't do things that keep knocking down your self-esteem and expect to have self-esteem. I wouldn't do any esteemable acts. So eventually this idea that I can get high with impunity, which is the idea that bombards anybody that's addicted to anything, the idea that you could do it this time, but it's going to be different. This time you're going to do it in moderation. This time you're going to smoke crack like a gentleman. that idea comes, but it also comes as cunning, baffling, and powerful. It don't come like all the time, like, yeah, go do this hard drug. It may come subtly and say, hey, how about a beer during the Super Bowl or a glass of champagne on New Year's Eve? Or just smoke a joint. You didn't have a problem with that. But that's the way that disease sneaks back up on you. And we call it a disease because it is a disease. It's a disease of the mind, the body, and the spirit, a spiritual malady coupled with a physical craving. Like the person, say a normal person who takes a drink of liquor, right? Like my wife, for instance, she's a normal person. She could drink, she could take a glass of wine and drink half of that glass, right? And she's done with it. Me? If I was drinking with her, I would look at, my wine would be gone, and I'd be looking at that half a glass she didn't finish. That's because I have a physical craving for the drug or the alcohol that kicks in when I put one in. You know, if I take a drink, I want more. If I take a hit of anything, I want more. And that's why it's cataloged as a disease. It is a disease. It's physiological, it's mental, and it's spiritual.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, after you did all that, what made you get into entertainment and become a comedian?
Well, you know what?
I always wanted to be in entertainment since I was a kid, since I was 10 years old. But I wanted to be a filmmaker when I was 10. And I made my first movie when I was 10 with a Kodak Brownie film camera, the kind you had to wind up when I was 10. And then I was an extra in a movie when I was 10. I used to walk from South Central L.A. to Hollywood, and that's a 10-mile round trip. 10 mile, it's actually 20 miles round trip, 10 up and 10 back. I would walk that distance to go to Hollywood to see, you know what I mean, just to see what was going on, and can I break in the show business some kind of way? What does it take? What do I have to do? Who's doing it? Where's the studios? You know, I wandered onto a studio stage one time and talked to a director. I wound up on movie sets where they were filming TV shows locally in L.A. and talking to the actors and stuff. How do you get involved in this stuff? But, you know, living in the environment and being influenced by the environment, you get distracted along the way. So off and on, wanted to be in entertainment. And then eventually at 12, I got involved with the Young Saints Academy. Now, the Young Saints Academy was so cool, and we need more stuff like that. It's a program, I don't even think they're around today, but it was a program designed to teach singing, acting, and choreography to youth and adults, right? And we would go around during Christmas time, doing these big shows. I'm talking plays and singing these big Christmas carol ballads on stage and stuff. I love that, but I also feared it because I should hide out on stage behind all the other actors. And I was kind of embarrassed to be on stage, shy, a little shy like that, you know. Did that for a while, but drifting back into the community and hanging out with thugs and doing all that stuff, eventually going to juvenile halls and camps. And even when I was going to juvenile halls and camps, I started writing at an early age. And I got to tell you, the first time I ever wrote anything was some poems, and I copied them out of a Mad magazine. Do you remember Mad magazine?
I
plagiarized Mad magazine and posted them up at the school in the juvenile hall like I wrote them, and people was like patting me on the back. That was good stuff, man. That was funny. And I liked the way that felt, you know, that people were bragging about what I did. But eventually I started writing essays and got really good at that, and I wrote some books which never got published. They got lost in the mix somewhere. But fast forward to 1990, when I got into detox, it's when I, they asked, did anybody know any jokes in the morning, you know, because they have this morning meditation session. It's about 50 residents in there, and they do the morning meditation and read these spiritual readings and whatnot. And then they say, anybody got a joke to close out with? So, and, you know, my first day there, I'm like, yeah, I got a joke. So I stood up and told a joke, and people laughed. I was like, wow, I like that. And prior to that, you know, growing up, I used to watch Evening at the Improv. This was the Improv Comedy Club, where I'm doing my show, ironically, now. My one-man show is at the Improv. But I used to watch Evening at the Improv on TV. It came on, like, Channel 11 or late night or something. And these comedians would be on there. And there was another show called The Midnight Special with Wolfman Jack. And they would also have a comedian. And I would listen to Cheech and Chong albums and Richard Pryor and watch the Flip Wilson show. I love comedy, you know, and my grandmother was funny as hell. My mother was funny. We had a laughing family. Even though we did drugs and got drunk and all that stuff, we laughed a lot. Very a happy, laughing family, you know. And I got to tell you, I went to the Improv one night to see the comedy live, and I saw a comic bomb on stage, right? Because, see, on TV, you don't see this part. This is the real club. And I saw the guy, he wasn't doing so well. And I was like, because I'd never experienced that. So I started getting uncomfortable in my seat. You know, I was uncomfortable for him. I'm like, ooh, wait, oh, they're not laughing. Oh, so that didn't feel good. I guess they kind of probably planted a little seed of fear in me. You know, like, have you ever think about doing this? Yeah, I'm going to get this, buddy. But fast forward to 1984, Michael Collier. I don't know if you know Michael, but Michael Collier is a very funny man. Was doing his show out on Venice Beach, and HBO came down and did his special from Venice Beach and everything.
Michael Collier had asked me to come work with him because I used to work on Venice Beach on the boardwalk. And I started working with him on his show, Wrangling the Money and all this stuff. And then he included me in a couple of acts, and that was fun and funny. But I admired that, and I saw, wow, this is how it's done, huh? I mean, he did this raw on the beach, hecklers, the whole, as raw as you can get. You know, you got hecklers, people, drunks, everybody coming up. Because this is a street performance. But he rang them in, and so... Fast forward to 1990 when I got sober and they said to anybody I got a joke. So I started telling jokes every morning at this recovery facility, right? And then when I ran out of jokes, I started writing skits and I would include other people in it, right? And we started acting out. And then we started recording skits on cassette tape and we would play them. And people were loving this stuff, man. They were laughing. And then I did a show. I did a big show. It was a, they were going to do a production around Christmas time. So I produced a four-part show, which included a fashion show, a very unique fashion show, mind you. It was a before and after fashion show. Showed the people before recovery, how tore up they were. And by the time the last person came through, all the first people that had went through had gotten all dressed up, cleaned up. Now they're coming back through. So it was so inspirational, you know. So we had the before and after fashion show. We had music, people singing spiritual songs and uplifting poetry. And then comedy. And the comedy portion, I had wrote these skits and plays. Well, skits, more so skits. Very funny stuff, like you saw in Living Color, right? And and I would do a little bit of stand-up. And then we started doing this show all over the place. It was called Brothers Against Drinking and Drugs. Bad Productions, B-A-D-D, right? And they, we were getting requested all over the place, man. And then people started telling me, you know what, you should do some comedy in the comedy clubs. And I flashed back to that night at the Improv when that guy bobbed on stage. I'm like, oh, I don't know about that. But then on September 21st, 1991, I decided I was going to go and do it at the Comedy Store in Hollywood. And I called Michael Collier, and I asked him, hey, man, I'm going to go on stage and do 3 minutes. You got any pointers? He said, just be yourself. Just do your thing. All you can do is laugh. They're going to laugh or they're not going to laugh. So I went on stage, and I did 3 minutes at the Comedy Store. It was dark. I couldn't see the audience. The lights were in my eyes. But what I heard was laughter after every punchline. And, I mean, big belly laughs, right? And I was just surprised because here at the other shows, a lot of those people knew me. But when you perform in front of a room full of complete strangers, none of them know you, but they're all laughing. That's a powerful thing, you know, to be able to move a crowd like that. And so I fell in love with it then, and I said I was going to be one of the best at this. I made a pact with myself, right? Oh, man. So, but then I went on. Eventually I started getting paid to do it and getting flown around to do it, and I got a job teaching theater and this and that, and I went to film school. And for years I worked behind the scenes, okay, behind the scenes, producing and directing for a lot of celebrities and commercials and different stuff like that. And you know, in and out of the drugs and all that stuff, but not so much so because, you know, once you get a little recovery in your belt, it's hard to get high comfortably. So in the last 20 years, 17 of that 20 years I've been sober. So that just goes to show how little time I spent out there getting loaded and more time in sobriety. So you fast forward to 2006, July 10, 2006, when I got back involved in recovery. And I had made a decision then that I wouldn't work behind the scenes anymore on productions like I used to. I was going to put myself in front of the camera and promote me, because working with a lot of celebrities and comedians, I saw that I was more talented and funnier than a lot of those people, you know. And they were getting all the breaks, and I was going like, what in the hell? So I said, I'm going to get my ass in front of this camera, man, and start focusing on one thing, and that's me. So, you know, I got a brand that I'm pushing, and that brand is Stevie Mac. Whether it's acting, stand-up, radio, everything is a calling card for that brand, and that brand is Stevie Mac. So, you know, pushing Stevie Mac out there to become a household name is the most important thing for me right now in terms of the more they know you, the more they want to pay you, and the more they think about you and including you in projects. Now, a lot of people do it for different reasons. I love what Kanye West said, having money is not everything, but not having it is. No. Having money's not everything, but not having it is. When you ain't got no money, oh boy, that's a problem. Now,
right.
Money is a tool that can be used or abused, you know. And I've been praying to get blessed with a lot of it so that I could use it to benefit a lot of folk, because I can carry my message further. A message of experience, strength, and hope. Using comedy as a tool and not a weapon is my motto. So, you know, you see me in the clubs. I tell people I could go squeaky clean or strip club nasty, even whole house filthy. It depends on the venue and how much they're paying. So, you know, because you can't go to a club where everybody's been cussing up a storm and try to do squeaky clean comedy, because it's like giving somebody who's eating steak tofu. And like, hey, I don't want this damn tofu. Give me some meat. So, yeah. I hope I said enough.
Definitely.
I don't
want to ramble. We want all the listeners to know that Stevie writes, he produces and directs TV shows, he acts in movies, has music videos and commercials. He hosts his own radio show 4 days a week, and he performs stand-up comedy all over the planet. And we're going to talk just a minute, a little bit more about the different shows that he is doing at this time. But we're going to go ahead, we have a couple of callers online, but we're going to go ahead and take a couple of calls real quick.
Yes, I'm taking a couple calls, my man, bro Mac. Appreciate you. The first one is 1337. Hey, caller, you're on the air. You're on the air, caller, you there? 1337.
That's the area code 337. Area code 337. What up?
Oh, that's the last four digits.
Last four digits.
1337. You there? Okay, we'll go to the next one. We got the last four digits.
9495.
You're on the air, caller.
Hey, what's up, Rob?
Hey, brother. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing all right. I'm really inspired by the brother. I'm really inspired. I see we have a lot in common by being raised up together. I'm really inspired by him, and I've been touched a lot by him. My name is Barefoot Pookie Angela White, and I'm really inspired by his brother. And we have a lot in common by coming up, you know, all over L.A. and all over South Central, you know. And, you know, what came to my mind is that when you talked about some things, you know, it made me think about the genocide, what they have done to our people. But it seemed like you have overcome that, you know, and that's the inspiration to all our brothers, you know. And that's a beautiful thing,
yes.
And I really respect you, man. And
thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was going to say, too, you know, that's very important you said the genocide part, because I made a point to include that in my one-man show, Diary of a Crackhead. Now, I talk about, you know, because I'm a comedian, and this is what my directors are telling me, is because I'm a comedian, I really crave the laugh. You know, I want that laugh. And so I do my material mostly to get laughs, but there's those dramatic points in there that I have to hit that make people cringe as well. You know, they're going to laugh because it's a play. It's a one-man show. It's not a stand-up comedy show. But because I've been doing stand-up comedy for 20 years, it's like I got this stand-up comedy blood in me. But I got to tell you, man, I made a point to include in the show the genocide factors and how the CIA and George Bush Sr. and Oliver North and them took guns down to South America to General Manuel Noriega and brought cocaine back and dumped it in the hood and gave it to Freeway Ricky and Waterhead Bo and all them boys in the hood and Whitey Enterprise. They was all getting cocaine from the CIA. And Maxine Waters had brought it out too. And, you know, they want to silence that truth, but all we could do is tell the truth and shame the devil. And my mother had the saying, say, tell the truth and jump 10 feet back, because they're going to get buck wild when you tell the truth.
Amen.
That is really something, you know. Like we're saying, you know, all the guns and all the AK-47s and all these high-powered rifles and guns and pistols. You know, we didn't bring them here. You know, so you know, it's all a conspiracy.
Man, and you know what? You made a good point that I forgot about that. In Watts, a train, okay, a train has stopped in Watts with the cargo door open, full of guns, AK-47s and all that. Now, what the hell was that all about?
Mm-hmm. And at the same time, when Ricky Ross, my history, you know, my past experience, you know, I got my first key from Ricky Ross. You know, on consignment. From Free Rick. On consignment in 1985, 1986. You know.
Wow.
That was the thing. So it was all a conspiracy. You know, all a conspiracy. You know, but
and we probably know each other. I'm 47.
Oh yeah, I got almost 8 years on you. But we probably do. We probably do, man. And I'm really inspired by you, man. The way you came, you know. And it's almost, I used to be funny when I was young too, you know. So I society and the things that you said, man, are straight to the point, man. And I would wish that, you know, that we spread this. Like I took off on with the concept of the peace protocol with Stanley T. Williams, because he had a lot of time, mm-hmm. to 20-some years on death row, you know, mm-hmm. So I took it all over the state. I took it abroad with me, you know. But what you got, it needs to be known, man. We need to spread that, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm really proud of my brother, man. And it seemed like I already know you, man. You know, you're such a humorous guy, you know.
Thank you. My man. We so appreciate you tuning in tonight, Book, you know. And you just stay tuned for a minute, and we're going to go to the next caller. Last four digits is 7099.
That's
on the air, caller.
Hey, y'all. It's LaDonna. I was just calling and listening to support, and that's all. I didn't have any comments or anything.
Okay, you just stay put, and we appreciate you calling in, and we will definitely, like for everybody to keep spreading the message about what's going on. All right, right now, Mac, we know we only got you for another 15, 16 minutes, you know what I'm saying? We're going to break to one commercial, and we'll be right back with my man Steve Mac.
All right.
My sister didn't do meth, and I got her into using it. And I don't know, I just kind of brought her down, and now my sister's pregnant, and she can't quit smoking, and it's really, really bad. She's like 7-8 months pregnant, and she's really tiny still. My name is Kara. I'm 15 years old, and I started doing meth when I was 11. Like, I lived with them, so then my sister was like, I'll try it, I guess. And then we started doing it every single day. I didn't think it'd have that big effect. I'm like, hey, I'm not hurting anybody. I'm doing it myself, you know. How could me smoking meth hurt that person? You know, they're not smoking it. They're not doing it. But it does. And my niece is a meth baby. My niece is only a year and 5 months old. I don't know. I didn't care if I hurt anybody along the way. I just did what I wanted to do at the time. And it's just, I know I feel really, really bad.
Brought to you by the Arizona Meth Project.
Hey, and welcome back to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. We got another caller for you, Mr. Mac, in the last 3761. Caller, you on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? Well, Rob, Lucinda, how you doing tonight?
Hello.
It's good, Lucinda. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
Off the chain.
Steve,
I'm off the
Mac?
Chain. Yes,
can you hear me?
Can you hear me?
Oh, okay. I thought I was off there. Yeah. You know what? I told my daughter a few years ago about Mac, the comedian, and she said, Bernie Mac, I know him. I love him. So she didn't know who I was talking about. And I said, no, not Bernie Mac. It's Stevie Mac. So I turned her on to you, and ever since that, now she's a follower of yours. You know, I love comedians, and I love artists who talk the truth. You know, a lot of these artists make it in Hollywood, make it all over, and they tend to change up. You know, you keep it real all the time, And you say it in your comedy, you say it here on the radio station, and you have no fear of saying it. You know, you said truths there that, and you mentioned the word genocide, which I have put down on the chat room, and which I wrote about in my book. And you know, I'm Latino from New York, and I saw the genocide be committed. We always, since I was a kid, I was hooked on heroin, and I knew as a kid where all these drugs were coming from. We all knew it. We used to see the cops take it out of, steal it from some gang. They sell it to the other guys. We knew it. We knew where it was coming from. But you know, so having someone like you speaking the truth, you know, it's really inspiring. You know, I speak to the kids all the time. And I tell them, but when you hear somebody like you tell them, listen, man, you got to keep it real, and this is how it is. You know, they listen to a lot more. So I appreciate you a whole lot. You know, keep up the great work, man. And God bless you. Continued success. And Roy and Lucinda, God bless you, too, for everything you have done. You guys are doing a tremendous job. I follow your posts. I see what your guys are doing. You know, by the way, I have a movie coming out by the end of the year. You probably saw the post of my life. And I probably will not be around to see it because, as you know, I have a terminal illness. But just to know that there was people still here, still pushing that word and still letting these kids know what's going on, you know, it's satisfying. It's knowing that, you know, it's not going to end when I end, you know. So, you know, keep up the great work, guys, and God bless us all.
Hey, we appreciate you stopping in, and, you know, we definitely keep you in all our prayers every day, and we definitely, you know that God is always able, you know? So we asking you to just keep the faith and keep God up held high, and we definitely right with you.
And be sure to send me a link to that movie so that I can spread the word.
Definitely will, sir. Thank you much. God bless.
Yeah. And we got another caller for you, Mac. They calling in. We got 1073, last 4 digits. Caller, you on the air. Last 4 digits, 1073. Okay, they just listening, Mac. So we're going to get you back, and we're going to ask you, tell the viewers a little bit more about your one-man show, you know, the Stevie Mac Diary of a Crackhead.
Yeah, and see, Stevie Mac's Diary of a Crackhead, the plot is a 90-minute one-man show about how I rose up through the ashes like a phoenix from a family riddled with drug and alcohol addiction, pimps, pushers, mental institutions, and prison ethics and mentality. I was saying at the end, you know, I had a tagline saying, this show will make you want to get up and live your best life now. And then my wife said, no, that's one of the taglines Oprah used. Don't use that. And I go, Oprah's a multi-millionaire. Maybe I do want to use that. I want to mimic those who are successful. But I did change the tagline, basically, just to say that this show is a triumph over adversity, to show how one can triumph over adversity no matter what your addiction is, because there's a whole new twist going down now. And this is how it works, man. And you can call it the devil. You can call it the conspiracy. You can call it the Illuminati. You can call it whatever you want to call it, but the plot thickens, and what it does is it changes form. The addiction changes form from drugs, because they see that our kids coming up gets too hip to the skip. See, when we was growing up, there were no crackheads for us to look and go, ooh, I don't want to be a crackhead when I grow up. But this next generation, they see crackheads, and they go, ooh, I don't want to be a crackhead when I grow up. So what do they have to get you with next? Materialism. So materialism becomes a new addiction, and it hits you with that, and it creates all these what I call false desires, all these false desires, like, ooh, you better have this, and if you ain't got that, then you ain't shit. Yeah, you better have these jeans, or you better have that ring, or these diamonds, or that. And so, and even with that, man, there's another generation coming up
which I call the skinny jean generation, which I really adore because they you can't confuse them with a gangbanger if they're wearing skinny jeans, first of all. And they're not really big on they're not really big on diamonds. So you best believe that the powers that be got to figure out a way to hook them. Okay, how do we hook them? What do we get them with? And ecstasy is a big drug that's out there right now that's hooking a lot of kids and killing kids, too, at these raves and different stuff like that. So it's always going to be something that we got to be on the lookout for. So this Diary of Crackhead, my one-man show, it takes you on a journey. And the journey that I want to take you on is a journey of degradation and what it takes you to and how to rise up out of it. Because to rise up, it's not how you fall down, it's how you get up.
Amen, amen. And we got another caller right here for you, Steve, before you go. I know you got about 10 more minutes. Last four digits is 2830. You're on the air, caller. Okay, I think they're listening to you, Mac. You can keep rolling, you know.
Okay, I ain't gonna run off and leave you. I know I said I was split at 9:30, but I'm hanging here with you a little longer. I got a little while longer. I'm at the jacuzzi. They don't close the jacuzzi till 10, so I'm gonna stay on here until they put me out the jacuzzi in my own community. Now, let me just say this: I'm in Inglewood, and for those of you listening worldwide, because the internet affords us to be international, people are listening simultaneous all over the world. That's the blessing of it. I got my show Stevie Mac Radio right here on Blog Talk Radio. I'm on Monday through Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and the call number is 646-716-6113. And all that is at steviemack.com, steviemack.com. Be sure and spell it right. You can Google Stevie Mac, steviemack, and all the stuff will come up that I'm doing and where I'm at. And I'm so many places, I get lost, okay? I Google myself one day, man. I found myself on so many different websites because of that. People find something good on the internet, and then they take it and they put it on their website. And you find yourself, if you're good, you know, that's a blessing, too. That's a testament to what's happening. And I'm just saying that to say that I am truly grateful, like the last caller talked about, me telling that truth, you know. I tell the naked, honest truth. And that's what we really liked about Richard Pryor, see, is that Richard Pryor told the unadulterated truth. Loved him for that. You know, you listen to Richard Pryor, you go, like, who would say that? Nobody would say that, but Richard said it, and that's why we love him. And so that's what I try to do. I try to just tell the truth and shame the devil and not be afraid. Like, you know, TMZ or the National Enquirer can't come up with nothing on me. Yeah, Stevie Mac blew two midgets. Well, first of all, them midgets suck my dick. And second of all, I was unconscious. That didn't really happen. I'm just saying.
I know.
That's how I would respond.
What we're going to do, we're going to just take a couple more minutes, Mr. Mack, and we're going to just shout that out for Mr. George again movement that he's doing. And we want people to know what we're speaking on right now is Mr. George Malorano, a friend of me and my wife's. And, you know, he's been incarcerated for 27 years away from his family in justice as well, first offense, nonviolence, and they gave him life sentence, and we know that that could be turned around.
And what state is he in?
Right now, Mr. George is in Philadelphia right now, but he's headed back to Florida, and I want to give everybody the information for the fundraiser that his family is giving him on August 18th, 2011. And the fundraiser is for Mr. George Malorano Injustice Fund. And if you would like tickets, you can call his family member, Rob, at 1-888-491-1255, or you can call Carol at area code 856-863-1164. And if you would like any kind of donation, you can send them to Creative Writing Foundation, Justice for George Malorano, and the address is 2626 South Chadwick Street, Philadelphia, PA 19145. And any other information you need, you can log on to our website,
at www.thestreetsdontloveyouback.com, and all the information about Mr. George is on there. We have set up a group for him in there, Justice for George, and also you can just do what you need to do, because I'm quite sure it's someone in your family that's been in jest with these drug laws as well, and we all need to stand up. Let these soldiers come home. You know, they've been incarcerated too long. When the abuser and the wife beater and the rapist, he's like a revolving door. You know, they're sending him to a fast and sending him home. So we need to fight for our soldiers to come on home. And I would like to give a shout out to my sister, you know, Francetta's boy. We will be launching her record label, Grand Slam Records. And me and my wife will be doing promotions for Grand Slam Records. So we're making that official right here on the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. So you'll be tuning in to my sister's label and her artist is coming out. So we definitely are giving a shout-out to my sister. And we're giving a shout-out to Mr. George's whole family. And you're in our prayers. And we push Mr. George all the way. So that's what it is. And none but not least, I'm going to pass it over to the minister.
All right. We're going to get back to Stevie here for a minute, and we're going to ask him to tell us a little bit about the chocolate chip dancers.
Ha ha! The chocolate chip dancers, baby. Let me tell you, the chocolate chip, and before I say that, I just got to say this. It's one of the many products. Stevie Mac. Chocolate Chip Dancers is another product of Stevie Mac, and we may even come out with some Chocolate Chip Dancer cookies, because we're working on a reality show right now, Sweating Off the Fat. Chocolate Chip Dancers, Sweating Off the Fat, or something like that. But yeah, the Chocolate Chip Dancers is a group of three portly men, myself included, and I've been losing too much weight. They want to kick me out now, but imagine three big fat dudes dancing with bow ties and cummerbunds and cufflinks. That's all they got on, well, pants too, but no shirts, to Beyonce, Single Ladies, in sync. They're dancing in sync, and they got a heck of a step and groove. Or they're dancing to MC Hammer's Can't Touch This, with Hammer pants on and everything. And so that's the Chocolate Chip Dancers. And what that was born of, I'll tell you, we did this audition for a TV show, and it was like one of those reality shows, and they wanted the guy was with the girl at the club, and she said, "I got some special treat for you." He thought some strippers was going to come out and give him a lap dance, and the Chocolate Chip Dancers came out. But we weren't called the Chocolate Chip Dancers then. We was three guys who was hired to do this that day who auditioned for the part. We didn't even know each other. And so I choreographed our dance steps in the green room at that club that we did the shoot at for BET. And this show never saw the light of day. They never even aired the show. It's sitting on the shelf somewhere. But what I did was I got the other guys' phone numbers and emails and said, you know what, this is a really funny act. We need to do something with this, right? And so we all hooked up, came over to my studio, and shot a music video to Beyonce's Single Ladies, and put it on YouTube. We said, let's put this out there, right? Full funny as hell. And it went viral, and it's had like 100-some thousand hits. And then what happened is we auditioned for a couple of TV shows and got on. We got on Country Music Television first, a show called Your Chance to Dance. And we was going for the $10,000, and we were going to win it, and then they kicked us off the show. They said, well, you know what, you guys don't fit the demographics of country music television. And then the next week, two white guys came out, same song, Bobby Brown's Every Little Step I Take, same outfits that we were going to wear, did the dance and won the $10,000. So we weren't mad, though. We was upset, but we weren't litigant. Like, I wasn't going to file a lawsuit. Because when you get litigious, you get litigious in Hollywood and start filing lawsuits, the word gets around. Yeah, you don't want to mess with him. But guess what? A couple of weeks later, VH1 hit us up, MTV, and said, we got this show over here called Dance Cam Slam. I submitted us over there. We got on that show, and not only did we Dance Cam Slam it, we won the first place on the first episode, the premiere episode of Dance Cam Slam on VH1. And then we went on KTLA Morning News here in Los Angeles for the $10,000 prize called Dance Your Dead Off. and we were in the finals for that. We beat out some badass dancers, let me tell you. And we don't claim to be the best dancers. We're the most entertaining, though. I dare anybody to watch the chocolate chip dancers and not at least smile.
Shaking your head, going, oh no.
Honestly, then we did the Super Bowl commercial. You run for the Super Bowl commercial. We did a lot of stuff, man. And now we got some stuff in the pike, a couple of pilots. I can't talk too much about them because it's real hush-hush, you know, Hollywood. But, yeah, we got some other stuff in the works. Chocolate chip dancers, baby.
All right. So what do you have planned for the chocolate chip dancers?
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I got ahead of myself and answered that question. We got some pilots in the works.
Okay.
We're and our next music video that I've been planning, it's been in my head. I wrote some ideas down about it, but I definitely want to do this one to the YMCA. Young man. Young man. I want to do that, where we wind up recruiting folks to dance with us on the way down the street, and we wind up at this big pool party, and then we look around, and all the dudes are gay at the party, right? And we get worried, and we're trying to get out of there. One of them jump on my back, and I throw him in the water, and we're running now. YMCA, trying to run from this gay pool party. I think it'll be funny as hell, and we'll win the gay community over with it. It'll be mild gay bashing.
So tell us a little bit about your radio show and what you do there.
Well, Stevie Mac Radio covers a multiplicity of topics. I got the Thursday Night Rant, and on the Thursday Night Rant, you hear Montel Jackson, Big Mike, and the Reverend Al. These are three different distinct characters who come on the show from Stevie Mac TV to talk about what's happening in current events, pop culture, and political fodder. So then regular days, Monday through Wednesday, I may interview a comedian, I may interview a celebrity or an author. I'm going to interview his sister about Grand Slam Records. So we interview folks on our show about what they're doing with their career and what they want people to know about. And every now and then I do what's called Top News Funnies, and I do also Today's Insanity. And just the past show the other day, Monday I did Tuesday I did yesterday TV and movie reviews. I do that every now and then too, where I cover the movies and television shows, where I talk about what's on them, who's in them, and how hot they are, and what I got out of them.
Okay.
Stevie Mac Radio is a ball of fun. A ball of fun.
Right, definitely. And how long have you been doing that?
A little over 2 years. I've just celebrated 479 shows today. Did my 479th show today. Been doing a little over 2 years.
Awesome. Sounds good. So what, I heard that you do something called goal charting. What is that?
Let me tell you, goal charting, for instance, if you want to get somewhere, you have to have a map in order to get there, right? So goal charting is a way to create a map for a particular goal that you have. Now, I got to tell you, it's 100% accurate goal charts because it's foolproof. I mean, you have to identify what you want, where you're at, and what it's going to take to get there. And there's the way that I do it, the bottom part, the middle part, and the top part is climbing the ladder with this goal chart. I first did it with a printer, like this printer that I went back in the 90s, and I got that printer the very next day. I anticipated not getting it for about a month. I did it with a house that I wanted to buy. You got to list specifically what you want, what color, what size, what kind of location. Everything has to be there, and then all the steps that it takes to get to there, right, from where you're at. And then you have to make a physical commitment to it. And if you ain't got but $5 in your pocket, you have to pull that out and put it towards your goal and then mark that on the chart. This goal charting, I used to do it every Wednesday with a group of folks, but everybody got busy. But goal chart, I'll tell you what, I did a goal chart for Stevie Mac Radio, right? And I said, okay, I want to take this radio to either satellite or terrestrial with a six-figure income and blah, 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 blah. And I did a whole chart on it. And you know what I did? I tore the chart up. You know why? Because it would have came true. And the reason why I didn't want it to come true is because right now I'm having fun doing my radio show the way I do it. It's like I call the shots, I book the talent, and I can say whatever I want to say. But if I wind up on terrestrial radio or satellite under somebody else's auspices who's paying me, then I got to do what they say. I got to play what music they want. I got to book the guests they want, and I better like them. So, you know, it's like, why ruin the fun? You know, if you're having fun doing something, why turn that into a chore? So go charge work.
Definitely fun to be able to do what you want. And you know, with us, we can book whoever we want, talk about whatever we want, and we're the boss. So it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I'm
going
to hand the mic back over to Rob for a minute.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Mike, I would just like you to tell our viewers tonight what positive suggestions will you give our youth of today and where they're headed now, you know? What positive message would you send out on the air today?
Okay, first of all, a word to the wise is sufficient. So I think back when I was a youth, and in my teens, right, what could somebody have told me that I would have listened to? And I always do that because, first of all, I have to speak to the youth and the young adults and the old folks in terms of how would I receive this message, you know. And then I look and I go, a lot of people spoke to me in different ways and delivered different messages, and some of that stuff stuck with me. Even though I didn't act on it then, as I grew wiser, I began to act on it and kept those things with me. So this is what I say to the folks that are listening. Anything you want to do in life is possible, but start asking yourself the right questions. As opposed to saying, why am I so stupid, ask yourself, how can I get more smart? Instead of saying, why am I so broke, ask yourself, how can I get more money? Because your brain is made up of the same stuff that the entire universe, the same material that the entire universe is made of. And what's going to happen is your brain and the universe is going to answer your question. But if you're asking the wrong questions, you're going to get the wrong answers. If you're asking questions that keep you living in the problem as opposed to living in the solution, you're going to live in the problem. Hmm. So that's one point, is ask yourself the right questions. And second is get a role model or a mentor. Find somebody who's doing what you want to do and mimic what that person is doing, and you'll get what they got just about. And the other thing is surround yourself with people who are in your corner and who are like-minded. If you hang out with gang members, you're eventually going to become a gang member, whether you want to be influenced by that behavior, or you're going to suffer the consequences of a gang member. He got shot, and he wasn't even in a gang. No, but he hung out with them. So, you got to look at that and stop hanging out with the type of people that you don't want to become. And I'm only speaking to the people who are smart enough and wise enough to take those suggestions.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right. Yeah, and you're gonna do what you focus on most. So, you know, try to, like you said, change your thought pattern and focus on positive things and different things so that you can get different results.
That's right.
So tell us again where all of your listeners can go to hear your shows.
Everything is at steviemac.com, steviemack.com. Over there are my links to my Twitter, my Facebook, my radio shows, my TV shows. I have a TV channel called Stevie Mac TV. There's a link there for that, and you can watch it all at my website. And some of the shows that I have there are Pimps in Suburbia, which is pimps who got out the game are now living in suburbia, working regular jobs as doctors, lawyers, gynecologists. They're playing golf and chess. Hilarious. Have you ever seen a pimp play golf? It's just off the chain hilarious. Pimps in suburbia. Inglewatch, the animated series. It's a bunch of instances in my life that I decided to animate and put over there on Inglewatch, the animated series. I got a new one called Finister McSinister. That in and of itself is just hilarious. Chocolate Chip Dancers over there. My stand-up comedy is over there. All that's under the Stevie Mac TV tab. And under the Stevie Mac Radio tab, you're going to find all the shows that you can listen to are there. And my shows are free on iTunes as well. Those links are there. My shows are also on YouTube. All that's at steviemag.com. You're going to find all that over there. My tour schedule is there. You click on the tour schedule button. My Facebook link, you can like me on Facebook on the first page of my website and also go right to my Facebook page, facebook.com/comedianstevemag, and become a friend over there. I got three pages on Facebook, Stevie Mac, Stevie Mac 2, and Stevie Mac, the fan page. And the first page is full, second page is filling up, and the third page needs your support. There's all that happened over there. And I also, what's the greatest nation on earth? Donation. There's donation buttons all over my site. You can also donate to send somebody to see Diary of a Crackhead, and that's on the first page of my website. And under the Stevie Mac radio banner, you can also start your own radio show. You can click that banner and start your own radio show for free in conjunction with Blog Talk Radio. So that's what's happening.
My man. And, you know, I'm going to definitely send you some information, Stevie. You know, I would definitely like for you to start promoting Mr. George's fundraisers and his ingest as well through your avenues as well. You know, we must all continually to speak out and bring these soldiers home.
No doubt, no doubt. Send that over, man.
Right. And you still got a few more minutes with us, right, Bro Mac?
Yes. Yes.
All right. We're going to go to our song, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and we're going to be right back with my man, Stevie Mac. Hang in there.
Indeed.
Yeah, yeah. This The Streets Don't Love You Back. We dedicate this to all the youths across America, all those who've been abandoned by their parents and loved ones. We let you know that God is good, always. Even when no one else cares, he's there for you.
Oh,
keep your head up.
Oh, hey.
The streets don't love you back. I hear grinding in a life of crime. The streets don't love you back. There's only one rule, baby, I don't get mine. The streets don't love you back. There's only one way on this lonely road. The streets don't love you back. Gotta do right before they call me home.
They'll never love you.
This is Rob Boyd checking in to let you know the streets will never ever love you back.
When I was abandoned
by my father in this world,
when I was abandoned
by the man that I thought loved me,
it took my whole life in another direction, my mind. How can you say that you love me in this world?
Never did nothing for me or my mama or my sister in this world.
How can you look at yourself and be proud of what you've done? Now I say to myself, as a little child, I went to the street world and I had to learn that it didn't love me back. Now I look at life so much in a different frame, my mind. Now I know the streets will never love me back. I thank God for what he's done for me, 'cause I listen to my mama in this world. Now I tell all the children, all the little boys and girls, the streets will never love you, will never love you back.
The streets don't love you back. I hear grinding in a life of crime. The streets don't love you back. There's only one rule, baby, I'ma get mine. The streets don't love you back. There's only one way on the
To give a speech or preach, but I promised God that I would do this if he get me out the street. See, when I was coming up, motherfuckers was loyal, but now they cracking under pressure when the situation boils and comes to a head. Another fuck in the road, everyone got affidavits, show their codies told. They wasn't scared to do the crime, but now these motherfuckers cowards. The county was one thing, but now it's no more private showers. It's all in the open, better learn to be a man. Fuck all the pistol popping, yapping, should've learned to use your hands. Went from pod storms to day rooms to mess halls and rec yards. You think you something special, everybody's got it hard. Penitentiary ain't like it is on TV. And a fair joint is something hope you never have to see. I don't care how tough you think you are to humble your ass. They got a room especially for you just to beat your ass. Shit sad, it's hard, raced by the streets with no dad. But going life or death impression ain't gonna never change the past. Cause
yeah, ladies and gentlemen, I like to dedicate this track to my mother, my brothers, my sister, to my man LD, his wife Holly, to my manager Lucinda, to my two sons, Michael and Robert. Dedicate this to my homeboys, the Bishop crew off Van Eyck and Harper, the Brewster Project, my man Chickaria, Warner County Project, 430 crew, Day and Fab, rest in peace. Let's do this. You live on through my vision. The streets don't love you back. One of your own made it. Now we tell the world, the streets will never love you back. Change your ways. Change your ways. Change your ways.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back here to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. That's a track right there that me and my homeboy LD did from the Streets Don't Love You Back soundtrack. Also, we got the Streets Don't Love You Back 2012 tour coming up. So if you would like to book us with anything, please go join the Streets Don't Love You Back .name.com for more information. And you'll see about the tour that's coming up. And there's some surprise guests on the tour, so you'll be tuning in. And once again, we're right back here with my man, Stevie Mac.
Oh. All right. Stevie, are you still in the hot tub?
I'm just getting out the hot tub.
Well, I'm starting into a prune yet.
I've been in and out. I don't just sit in it. You got to get in it, get out of it, get in it, get out of it. Reset the timer, get out of it. And I'm getting out for good now. That was a good workout there. Now, I was listening to that song and I was thinking, like, wow, I could see the Streets Don't Love You Back as a stage play.
The Streets Don't Love You Back is actually a book that Rob wrote about his life growing up in one of the worst ghettos in Detroit, Michigan, being a gangbanger drug dealer back in the 70s and 80s. And we actually took the Streets Don't Love You Back and made our movement and then started our radio show, now TV shows and websites and all that. So it just kind of took off. And it definitely, could be a movie or a play itself because, he did the freeway records and when all the crack was going through. And, they made millions of dollars in the neighborhood, back then. And, he tells his story of how he got through that.
There you go.
Yeah, he came a little more.
Oh, yeah, Steve, like the mister said, the book came about my life story. I had, kept quiet for a lot of years, 22 years to be exact, I went to my mother, and asked her, about me writing my life story. And, once my mother gave me her blessing, it was time to roll, And, behind me telling my story, I've done helped a lot of people open their eyes up, not young, but old as well, And
yeah,
that's how the Streets Don't Love You Back movement came about, and the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. And we got two TV shows. One of our shows been on for 13 years, the Keep It Real show, Arizona, Warner Cable out of Cincinnati, Ohio, and we have another TV show called Change, also plays on Warner Cable in Cincinnati, Ohio, and it hit over 1.5 million households per week. So, yeah, everything just came, man. And, you know, I always give God the glory, and my mission is to give back and help others, you know what I'm saying, and mainly let everybody know a lot of older people who have been around clubs and games that need to be educated on that, you know?
Yeah.
It's an education format to help others as well as, you know what I mean, opening up people's eyes to what's real out here, man. And
so they're not naive.
Exactly, because there's a lot of things that go on that people say, oh, not my little Johnny. Not my little Susie, and them be the main ones I can do it. Your little Johnny and your little Susie. So I plan to educate, man, and we've been doing that gracefully with God's blessing. And once again, I just want to thank you for coming on the show, man, and, you know, tuning in with us to promote Mr. George as well, because that's been heavy on me and my wife's mind. Matter of fact, I spoke to Mr. George this morning. He called me and the wife this morning. She was still asleep, and I answered the phone, and it was my man, Mr. George, you know. So it was a blessing to hear his voice, and like I told him, his soldiers is out here on the battlefield, you know, doing what we need to do to free Mr. George. And it's going to continue to grow, because I'm calling on all soldiers, all lieutenants, all captains, so let's make this happen.
Yes, y'all. Yes.
Yeah. So we definitely pushing this for my boy Mr. George and other guys that's with an ingest out here, and that's what the Streets Don't Love You Back movement is all about. And we will continue doing that. And after I'm dead and gone, the legacy will still continue to push and help others.
Yes, sir. It's the time it is.
Oh, anything else you would like to tell your viewers, Mac?
I just want to say that I'm glad everybody tuned in. And if you're ready to get some of that down-home booger nose funny comedy, keeping it real, how about the boy, stevemac.com. That's where that. That's where I'm at. You're going to find me right there. I ain't hard to find.
My man. You know, so, we're going to go back to my man, Pook, because I see he's been rolling with it all the way to the bitter end. You know, hey, Pook.
Hey, what's up, my role?
Man, we appreciate you, homie. You rolling all the way to the bitter bone, man. I love that, man. You know, anything else you would like to say to Mac?
Yeah, well, you know, hey, just keep pushing it, man, and, you know, hey, you're doing the right thing, man. You know, you got history, man, and I'm loving it too, man, you know. And if I can represent you in any kind of way, I will, you know. I believe in you, you know.
Send me an email, info@steviemac.com.
Hold on, let me write it down.
info@steviemac.com. Send me an email. Remind me where we met, and we will definitely talk, because there's room for everybody to get in and do their share to make this world a better place for those coming after us.
Right.
info@steviemac.com.
I got you, Stevie.
Right. Info, the at symbol, and then Stevie Mac, STEVIEMACK.com.
And keep doing a beautiful job, man. And hey, it's a pleasure.
Well, I can't wait to meet you. I know we got history.
Hey, I'm gonna send you some information too, Pope. I want you to, launch you know, that same movement for my boy, Mr. George, out there in L.A., you know. And we left it across the country, man. We're just in just with our homeboy being locked down. And I'll send you all Mr. George information and where people can send donations at and everything. Right. And about the August 18th fundraiser that his family is giving him in New Jersey, and, you know, we can spread this message all across the country, man, because, you know, we got a lot of homeboys unjustly out here with these drug charges, and we got these suckers and monsters going in and out of jail for hurting our women and kids like a revolving door. So we got to stand up. I told my other homeboy, you know, I'm thinking about, you know, putting together a march on Washington for all this. You feel me? Same way Martin Luther King did it. You feel me? If you ain't trying to hear the people will come to you. You will hear.
That's right. We need to go back to how they did it.
We can't get it twisted out here. You know, it's time to stand up for all these 30-year sentences and these life sentences you take from a man and a woman and don't give them no second chance. You know, you just snatch their whole life away, you know. But once again, you know, we got people that's hurting our women and kids, and they getting out like a revolving door, man.
Come on with it.
Yeah. You know, so I told Mr. George, and I gave him my word, that the soldiers is going to be out here on the battlefield for him. And you know how we do it, folks. We keep our word, man, to family, you know.
So send me that information, Rod, and I'll print everything out, and I'll give out the ceasefire, and I'll get out all the meetings and stuff like that. And so we can go from there, publishers and everything that I work with. And we can go from there.
My man. And I want you to let them know about y'all thing that comes out on Wednesday, too, Pook, about the ceasefire out in L.A. You know, let them know about that while we're on the air.
Matter of fact, the ceasefire was tonight, and Wednesday night ceasefire is tonight. So what I'll do next week I'll print out all those things you send me, and I'll get them around.
My man,
because we have a lot of brothers and sisters that's in jail for non-violent crimes, you know, non-violence, you know, drugs and all that. You know, they need no trouble hold. Like I just got a call from the government. Asked me. He was telling me that his roommate told him the same thing, you know, about the loopholes, you know.
Right.
So you know, that was very good.
Right. Yeah, I told Mr. George, man, that we definitely was going to be pushing this thing everywhere, you know, on our TV shows, radio shows, the whole nine yards, man. So. Word is bond, and we're going to continue doing what we do. And at the end of the show, we're going to give out his information again. So we're going to go back to my man, Stevie Mack, and give him his last words. And after that, we're going to go to the song for him. You feel me?
Oh, man, that's awesome, Chad. I'm glad I'm having last words and not last rites. Like, Stevie Mack, read him his last rites. I just want to say, man, it's awesome to say everybody's coming together to do something positive, to make a statement and a testament. So we can all move forward. Each one teach one and use your talent to reach one with whatever you got. And your boy, Stevie Mack, can keep doing what he's doing, spitting that unadulterated truth.
Right.
Okay. Recovery one life at a time, right?
Yes.
I think that's
healing the world
you.
One laugh at a time. healing the world one laugh at a time.
Yes, sir. All right. Well, we would sure once again like to thank you for coming on the air with us tonight and sharing your story and sharing your inspiration. And we definitely want to stay connected with you and network with you and everything that we're doing. And we'd like to encourage everybody out there to join the Streets Don't Love You Back movement. And our website is the Streets Don't Love You Back. www.streetsdontloveyoubackcom. And, you know, join as a member there. Put your profile page up, all your information, and that's the website that you can find out pretty much, you know, what we're doing, where we're at, and who we're working with, and, you know, who we're helping out. You know, so please join the Streets Don't Love You Back movement. Also, don't forget to pick up your book, The Streets Don't Love You Back, and also the newer book, Never Hit a Woman. And you can order those off of our website, or you can also order them and get the ebook at lulu.com/The Streets Don't Love You Back. And once again, donations for Mr. George Martirano can be sent to Creative Writing Foundation, Justice for George Martirano at 2626 South Chadwick Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 19145. Also, if you would like more information, you can call Carol at 856-863-1164 or Rob at 1-888-491-1255. And, you know, the family appreciates everyone's support and involvement and help. And, you know, we're just here to help pass the word and help spread the message out there. Once again, also, we also are planning the Streets Don't Love You Back tour, along with Gangsters for God, who will incorporate several different former mafia, just different people who have been in the life and are now inactive. And one of them is Brian Gambino, and one of them is Philip Anthony Stein Hall. And we look forward to going out and talking to our youth and educating them you know, about the dangers of gangs, drug violence, crime, you know, whether it's street gangs, mafia, mob, you know, from the top to the bottom, any way you see it, wrong is wrong. So, you know, we're just going to get out here and spread the message. We're going to take it from city to city. Anyone that wants to jump on board with us, you know, get with us, let us know. The more the merrier. Let's make it a big positive influence in the youth of our America. Rob, take it out.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say once again, we thank my man Stevie Mac for coming on the show. We thank my man Poop for tuning in all the way to the finish line. We would like to thank all of our listeners that listen in on the internet and everywhere. And we would just like to say, always remember that the streets definitely don't love you back. And each one teach one, reach one, help one, like my man Max said. And we're going to take the show out with a great song like we always do. And that song is going to be called You Played Yourself. And don't play yourself out here, because once you play yourself, it's game over, lights out. Much love, peace, and much love to my man, Mr. George Martirano family. And we down with you all the way, my man. The soldiers is on the battlefield. Peace and love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is B.O.Y.D. and Struggles coming straight at you, baby. Much love to my homeboys up in Detroit off Van Eyck and Harbor. Much love goes out to my homeboys in Cincy that's always kept it real. And to you clear haters, this goes out to you.
No need to look any further. Look like brother, what you thought? Boy, Rick is knocking you out like over touching does it go. Made you pull up with this northern exposure. Smoking doja, and I'm coming on the real. Yes, the real, I thought I told you. And I'm keeping it to your budget just like HIV. Stand away from all them player hating people with degrees. It's time to come up. Why do you bet not, brother? Because you put your faith and your plans into another man's head. That move is bogus. Struggles here to let you know this. That you never ever be a part of the dopest. Who put your faith in the spot? Who cooled it off when it was hot?
Who made it live when it was? Now you can't even speak it.
It's time to nut check. Time for respect. Time to break neck. You wanted out for family. Now it's time for you to check. And you chasing waterfalls. It wasn't meant, fool. In other words, you played yourself. Now who's cool?
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
No, 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 you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
You played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
Wait a minute. You played yourself. Because you didn't play the cards that was dealt. Partner, you played yourself. You tried to engage yourself with some people who didn't have no freaking wealth. So hide your health. Ain't nothing good gonna come out your freaking game. Cause everything you do bad gonna come back twice the pain. Who's to blame? Listen to the black rain. About to shake the ground for all you backstabbing people in this town. I'm known to bring the anger, make you hiss like a snake. Here's a hint from my partner.
Break it down in your face.
Hey, yo, I'm making it back up in you to dissect you like a chemist. You played yourself, and I was a witness. Your career is finished. Don't be misled by the words that I speak. I keep it real. You had a taste of both sides. Not how it feels.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
No, 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 you played yourself.
I said you played yourself.
You played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
Wait a minute. You played yourself, because you didn't play the cards that was dealt.
You can be as good as the best of them and bad as the worst of them, but don't test me, brother. No, brother, don't test me, no.
You be like that Benedict on the backstabbing brother behind my back. But in my face, you be like Struggle, yo. Where the party at? I be like push on. Get on, get out my face, partner. Cause ain't no love lost, and ain't no love here neither. I can't believe that you betrayed me. Took food from my face, but you have been acting kind of shady
played yourself.
No, you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
You played yourself.
I said you played yourself.
Wait a minute, you played yourself. Cause you didn't play the cards that was dealt. Brother, relax your mind and let your conscience be free. You're down to the sounds of struggling I'll be. Your negativity be struggling against my surface. Cause the things that I did for you, your ass can deserve it. Now I'm on some payback for the things you did like way back. Answering all your questions like my name was backstage. Jesus had 12 disciples and one wasn't true. And he knew, like I knew, I never ever should have messed with you. So I'm gonna do what I gotta do and then some. If a brother try to flex, I take his life for ransom. Even when I'm by myself, I roll with a crew of soldiers, sick as fluid soaks. Known to turn your body black and blue, I told you, why did you test it? I'm the one who put you on. See, if it wasn't for me, you'd be like a mobile phone or Rome, cheat. It ain't no me and us, it ain't no he and we. I thought we would be together like OJ and AC. You were that brother I pull a trigger for. You a freaking beard for. Now you just that off-brand nigga, bro. You played yourself. No, I said you played yourself. Hey, yo, you played yourself. No, partner, you played yourself.
Hey, yo, you played yourself.
Wait a minute, you played yourself. Cause you didn't play the cards that was dealt.
You can be as good as the best of them and bad as the worst of them. But don't test me, brother. No, brother, don't test me, no.
Why did you test me, gang? I told you don't ever tempt me. But now I gotta come at you for real now. You should have kept it real. But when you don't keep it real, situations sometimes get hectic in your life. But you should have understood. So why did you play yourself, player? I look at you all the time when you don't think I see you. I see you. Our boys up north, baby. We got our own way of dealing with player haters.
Come on. Bring it. Bring it in. Come on. Too.
And I don't think you should ever did what you did.
You played. And it's on the radio.
Sometimes I know you had nightmares waking up sweating and things when it coming in.